Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're having what I call an intelligence briefing of the first order from Paul Sperry, one of the country's best intelligence and national security reporters, investigative reporters of our time. He is also an accomplished author, including two books that we're focusing on at the moment, Infiltration, How Muslim Spies and Subversives Have Penetrated Washington, and Muslim Mafia Inside the Secret Underworld That's Conspiring to Islamize America. Paul, we were talking a moment ago about the role that the Saudi government plays, not just historically, but as we speak, in funding activities that are supportive of, the Muslim Brotherhood and its various front organizations and the toxic brew that they are creating in the guise of what they call civilization jihad inside the United States, a kind of stealthy jihad. And it's funded, at least in part, by the government of Saudi Arabia through this so-called Muslim World League. This would seem to be a direct assault on the United States by the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Am I missing something here?
They're financing subversive activities in this country, and yet we consider them still an ally. It's outrageous. But the Muslim World League has been tied to al-Qaeda. They propagate jihadi materials to the Islamic schools and the mosques here in the U.S. They propagate Wahhabism in America. They're importing a seditious and violent culture, ideology, into this nation to try to turn America into an Islamic state. That is the ultimate goal. And the other thing, the other piece of this, what they're doing is they're doing immigration jihad, and they're trying to get as many, first of all, Saudi nationals as they can into our college campuses, where they've, of course, then in turn join the Muslim Students Association, which is this jihadist front group, and get all these young other Muslims either recruited or convert non-Muslims to this Islamism. And I discovered that through just the data, no one's looked at this, that under Hillary Clinton's reign there at the State Department, the floodgates were opened for student visas from Saudi Arabia. We really put the kibosh on that after we found out that some of the hijackers got in on student visas. They were rubber stamped through this Visa Express program we had set up with Saudi Arabia, where we didn't even really do any serious screening in advance with, of their application. So we didn't know who was coming in. So we said, well, okay, let's stop that. And then we had this dearth in visa issuances from 2001 to about 2008, 2009. All of a sudden, an inflection point right there. Boom, you have this hockey stick that just shoots right up, the handle of the hockey stick, if you can envision that, under the Obama regime and under Hillary. She's the one who's doing this, approving this change in policy. But what's really alarming about, by the way, over 700,000 new student visas and business visas for Saudi nationals have been rubber stamped under Obama, 700,000.
Just to be clear, what you're describing is the wholesale reversal, it sounds like, of policies that were quite sensibly adopted after 9/11 to try to restrict the inflow of Saudi nationals, many of them young men, seeking, among other kinds of studies in this country, flight training. Just obviously in the wake of 9/11, quite sensible. What possible grounds could there have been for undoing those restrictions and admitting, 700,000 folks, including some of those I've just described?
Well, the official line was, this is good for business, but we don't know. We can't track these. By the way, this is virtually all young Saudi men. The women don't get the student visas to come over here to get educated. These are all young Saudi men, just like the 15 hijackers.
And jihadist age, one might say.
Jihadist age. They fit the profile. Come over here. We don't do the NCERS program anymore, where we used to do, marginal tracking of them when they came in to see if they actually went to where they said they were going, and then that they actually left when their visas were expired after 5 years. No, we don't even do it. We have no idea if they even show up on campus, and they're just flooding by the tens of thousands each month coming in on these student visas. But I mean, this has just replaced. You know, we have this Visa Express program. Everybody was outraged after 9/11 that we had this program at the State Department. We shut down the special program with Saudi Arabia, just rubber stamp them, their applicants to come into the U.S. on these visas. Well, we've just replaced that. We don't call it Visa Express anymore, but now it's called Trusted Travelers. So now we've, under Hillary and under the Homeland Security Department, and almost virtually no American knows this. Saudis are now considered one of the least security risks of any nationality coming into this U.S. They're on par now with Canadians.
That's simply unbelievable.
French and Germans aren't even in the Trusted Travelers program, but the Saudis are now. And that happened, and one of the last acts that Hillary did in 2013 when she left, which she signed off on this and had special meetings. The story's up on Counter Jihad. We have the photographs of her with the Interior Minister of Saudi Arabia coming over here. They're signing deals on this day that this happened. It's outrageous.
And
it was never covered.
And as you say, Paul, the so-called National Security Entry Exit Registration System, NSEERS, was over the side as well. So essentially we saw this wholesale dismantling of these procedures put into place to try to protect us against the Saudis, and much of it can be tied directly to Hillary Clinton herself. And I just have to ask you, one of the people whose family benefited massively from the Muslim World League's support over the years, and specifically the patronage of the guy who ran it for a long time, Abdullah Omar Nassif, is, of course, Huma Abedin, Secretary of State, Clinton's deputy chief of staff for a number of years, her longtime associate, her deputy campaign manager these days. Paul, give us a sense of what Huma Abedin's family business, the Institute for Muslim Minority Affairs, was doing with funding from the Muslim World League, from the government of Saudi Arabia, and whether that may bear in some measure on what kinds of things she was presumably advising Hillary Clinton to do vis-a-vis the Saudis, among other Islamists and Islamic supremacists.
Huma Abedin is her closest advisor. It's just not her body lady, as they describe her, who gets her coffee and all this stuff and her favorite Starbucks. She has untold influence over Hillary now, and, you know, she's working on the campaign, and she could end up in the White House in a very senior role. But her father, Saeed Abedin, I'm talking a little bit out of school here because I'm not as well-versed in this, but he was recruited by this Saudi official to come to move from, I believe they were in Michigan, Kalamazoo or something, and to move actually to, I believe it was Jeddah. It was either Riyadh or Jeddah to set up this propaganda organ for the Muslim Brotherhood over there, and put out all sorts of propaganda for the Saudis and Islamists.
And specifically, as I understand it, Paul, promote this idea of non-assimilation of Muslim minorities in the West in the interest of incubating essentially the populations that would help turn those non-Muslim nations into, as you said earlier, Muslim-majority nations. I mean, this sounds kind of unbelievable, but it's the long-term project of the Muslim Brotherhood and of the government of Saudi Arabia, and we have been one of its targets. Paul, we have to pause for just a moment. We'll be right back with more on Huma Abedin, her influence, and the kinds of policies that not only have we seen from Hillary Clinton, but that we might under a President Hillary Clinton. Right after this.
Go go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.